It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Democrats are stoking division in order to distract from their decades of failure on schools, jobs, housing, justice, and crime. In major city public schools run by Democrats, over two-thirds of students are falling behind in reading and math, and I think the numbers are worse than that. But Democrats would rather deny these children the future they deserve than allow them to attend the charter, public, private, religious, or independent schools of their choice. Pro-choice. Pro-choice. Pro-choice for schools. It's very popular, but some people it's like a disaster because what it does to certain unions that have a lot of power over the Democrats, even though they know it's wrong. Republicans believe access to education is a civil right. It's a civil right. 20 of the most dangerous cities in America are controlled by Democrats. Think of that. 20 of 20. And so is nearly every major city with a child poverty rate that's over 30%. They're controlled by Democrats. We can name every one of them.
So that was the President of the United States at the rally in Tulsa, his first rally in months, his first campaign rally. And that's kind of a bit of what it sounded like on Saturday night. So what did happen? Because you're hearing lots of things about what happened, right? The venue held 19,000 people, and yet there were, according to the count of the Tulsa Fire Department, only 6,400, something like that. Well, what happened? Well, a lot of things happened. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to read you some firsthand accounts of people that are not in the news, but they have weighed in on what their experience was like. We're going to share that in just a second. And if any of you were at the rally, I would be really interested in talking to you. Our phone number is 888-589-8840, 888-589-8840. If you were there and you have some comments or saw something that you want to report. So, because we're hearing lots of things, aren't we? We're hearing, let's see, what did Chris Wallace say? I want to read to you what Chris Wallace had to say. He had Mercedes Schlapp on Sunday, and I don't have the clip of it, but it sounded something like this. The fact is, the president talks about the attendance at his events, as we all know. He made a big issue of the attendance in his inauguration. He talks about how he can fill an arena and that Joe Biden can't. He didn't fill an arena last night, and you guys were so far off that you had planned an outdoor rally and there wasn't an overflow crowd. Watching the coverage and talking to Mark Meredith on the ground today, protesters did not stop people from coming to that rally. The fact is, people didn't show up. Chris Wallace yesterday encouraging Mercedes Schlapp. And then she said, he ends it by saying, frankly, it makes you guys look silly when you deny the reality of what happened. So that's kind of the way you're hearing it reported, right? So let's talk about what actually did happen. We do know that TikTok, who would have thought? TikTok. What is TikTok? I don't know. Our kids know what TikTok is. A woman in Mary Jo Lepp, who belongs to TikTok, was on with Brian Stelter on CNN, and she's known as TikTok Grandma because she's not a teenager. So she sent out a video inviting and challenging teenagers who belong to TikTok to buy tickets or order tickets. There's no purchase price for the Trump rally, and then don't go. Wouldn't that be funny? And so that's what they did. The video was viewed by more than 2 million and has received over 700,000 likes. So no one knows exactly how many teens ordered tickets. But Brad Parscale, who is the president's campaign manager, said that the thing of it is when people register for a rally, you have to give a cell phone number, and they do weed out bogus numbers. So I don't know exactly, but AOC, she was really happy about it too. She was laughing about it. She says, actually, you just got rocked by teens on TikTok who flooded the Trump campaign with fake ticket reservations and tricked you into believing a million people wanted your white supremacist open mic enough to pack an arena during COVID. So that was AOC's comments on this. And so we know that obviously something like that would affect the attendance, but that's not the only thing that affected attendance. I want to tell you a couple of other things. I was watching, well, first of all, did anybody notice that there have been protests on the streets, kind of violent protests? Anybody notice that? I think we did notice it. We told you that 10 busloads of protesters were being, the story was brought in, and I think they probably were, but they weren't as violent as they were. It was Tulsa, after all. They weren't as violent as they were in Seattle, but they did, wreak some havoc, but maybe not the havoc they would like to have reached. But that was intimidating to some people, to go to a rally like that when there are so much danger, especially for your kids. And so I'm sure that did affect people's decision, but that's not all. I personally witnessed this. I watched Fox on Saturday. I don't usually, on Saturdays, I try to just unplug, actually, and not pay attention to the news, because for my mental health, it's good. But I watched because I was concerned about the rally, and I kept praying for the president's safety and the safety of the people of Tulsa and the safety of the city. And I heard Fox over and over and over and over and over and over and over again telling people how the coronavirus has spiked and the World Health Organization has issued this warning that it's dangerous, especially in Oklahoma and Florida, those horrible states. There are so many more cases, so many infections. Of course, do you understand this is twisted reporting? Remember, the World Health Organization is backed by China, supported by China financially. They do China's bidding. Didn't we know that? But I guess Fox doesn't know that. So suddenly, before the rally, the president, the city, the town, the state, that the president's going to be, and that's the worst place to be. I mean, there are tons of infections, but what we know, please, if that's confusing to you, because churches are doing the same thing. They're acting as though this is reality. Just because there are more infections, more cases, doesn't really mean anything. Because a virus is carried through people. It's going to be present. We will never be out. We will never not have coronavirus. Corona is like a common cold and flus. It's what's been in existence for hundreds of years, the virus. And we, even though you might have it, it doesn't mean you're going to get sick. Most people, 90%+, never get sick, never show symptoms. And more testing reveals more of us carrying the virus. It means nothing. It means nothing. And when they say hospitalizations are increased, that's because you might recall that for about 3 months, nobody was able to go to the hospital. So now people are going for procedures and now they're filling up. So that's simply the answer to why hospitals are suddenly filled. It's not because of coronavirus, but don't think that did not have an effect. And last but not least, the Tulsa mayor. After people had driven down days before and were camping out, trying to, make sure they were in line to get into the arena, the Tulsa mayor shuts the city down and says, I forgot it was loitering, or he shuts the city off. And so you think that might have had an effect? But I want to tell you a couple of things you won't hear other places. I am hearing from insiders in D.C. that TikTok is Chinese. It's an anarchist communication system. They say that it was a seemingly organized disinformation strategy, which is quite sophisticated for a group of teenagers. So TikTok, that's its originations. Then I have some email from people who were there, and I want to share those with you too, because I think that's probably the truest account of what we're going to have here. Tired of hearing the lies that the Tulsa rally was a flop by the fake media. The only seats available were a couple of hundred in the far upper chamber. It was tremendous, electrifying. All the thousands of people attended were uplifted. people who were brave enough to go against the lies in the media, brave enough to say, I will go and try to get in. And then she goes on to say, people who had to leave their, I know people who had to leave their five children farmed out for a couple of days so they could drive 3 hours and stand in the hot sun, risk infection, and find a place to spend the night, even though they were not sure of getting in. They came. A young lady in her 30s who served for 12 years in the Marine Corps drove 10 hours from Denver by herself and stood in line. And then there are other teenagers, the young male teens, older people. I'm not going to be able to read all of this, but I want to make sure I get to at least the general idea. This is Jeannie and I had reserved tickets to attend the rally, although somewhat chaotic with people driving by yelling obscenities as we walked. A couple of fights. Everything wasn't actually that bad in terms of violence on the streets. He said it was hard to find out where to go in. Wasn't well marked. We finally found out at the exact moment we approached the first barrier with police tape. There were police lined up at the tape. And at the opening, we were greeted by the Secret Service or contract military, not sure who they were, at 6:05 p.m. who told us, along with a multitude of others at our gate, there were three separate entrances, that we could not enter. They said that the arena had reached its capacity and the temperature checkers had left prematurely and acted pretty smug, about which I thought was strange. Some who waited with us said they had friends on the inside who texted and told them there were still many empty seats available, so we waited at the police tape entrance, dumbfounded, for 20 minutes until the police line started backing up and went through a 10-foot fence and chained and locked the gate. No other explanation. Further, no one was even allowed into the Jumbotron area to watch it outside. Anybody remember the president and the vice president were supposed to go to that Jumbotron area, but they couldn't because evidently they were not allowed to get in there. And so people are gloating over the fact that they did not were not able to make that speech outside. I promised I'd go to the phones. Let me go to Marilyn first. Marilyn, if you can make it really quick, that would be great. You went?
Yes. Yes, I was. I was there on me and my sister were at the back gate where none of the rioting or whatever was happening. We felt really safe. That's where all the military and all the police and the volunteers, everybody went through. We got in and inside the arena, I saw 3/4 of it full. And so I always tell my friends, you do the math. That's more than 6,200. But, still, I had heard that there were other things going on at the other gates, but we felt completely safe other than people driving by yelling their obscenities, and everybody inside was just amazing.
Yeah. Okay, Marilyn, thank you. I have to hurry because I want to go to Rebecca in Arkansas. You guys delay this by a minute, please, this segment. Rebecca, you were there?
Yes, we went. We had gone in the morning to a committee meeting, Republican State Committee meeting in Hot Springs, to select our delegates and alternates, and it went long. Didn't get to leave Hot Springs till 1:40. Put us to Tulsa at 6:15 with just one crazy short stop, and went to two of the gates. The first one they said there was some reason they'd shut the gates. And then they said, you could maybe try another gate, some people were saying. We went to it and heard the same thing. There were National Guard troops within the gate. I got to thinking afterward, we really weren't protected outside the gates. It was just inside the gates, and police were there moving around. But there were families with little kids with us outside the gate. Trump supporters. We were like a big happy family, black and white and Hispanic. And we visited together. We were hoping something would happen. I heard that the president did speak inside at an overflow zone. Thought it was funny there was an overflow zone. We were talking on the phone with people inside the arena who said there were a few seats left. They knew we could get in, but everybody was hoping. It seemed to start a little earlier than 7 o'clock. That could have been part of the problem. I don't know.
So, Rebecca, you did not get in? You did not get in.
I did not get in. We had reserved.
That makes no sense. Yeah, that makes no sense. Rebecca, I'm sorry. I have to cut. I wish I had more time. Peggy, quickly, 30 seconds. Peggy, you were there?
I was there. I got in. We went at 11:30, and we waited for 3 hours. It was hot, lots of people. We got in, and we had no trouble to get there. We saw no protesters. We walked from where we parked. It was exhilarating, and it was only the far upper chamber that had a couple hundred seats vacant.
Now, see, isn't that interesting? You're the second person that said that. That was in the email, too. So, boy, we're just going to have to stop. We just can't trust what we hear, can we? And so, Peggy, thanks. I really appreciate that account and all of you. So when we return, Senator Jeff Sessions will join us. Sandy Rios in the morning.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. We've been all over the country helping disaster victims who lose everything.
It's truly a blessing. I really don't have the words to express.
And yet, they see a glimmer of hope when a volunteer shows up.
Building the home, that's the second reason we're here. The number one reason is to share the gospel and give them hope.
It's everything that's right in America. I mean, it really represents the best that we have to offer.
That's one of the main reasons for doing it, is being able to be the hands and feet of Jesus and coming out and working with so many wonderful volunteers.
I just feel like it's important in this day and age to teach a child how to serve.
Please go to our website, 8daysofhope.com, and click on Get Involved. Submit your email address, and the next time we go anywhere with a disaster, we'll invite you to come along as well.
I love coming in the job room because you can see these pieces of paper, they aren't just a piece of paper.
Right.
It's a family that's hurting, and it's a gospel opportunity.
And I just thank God, you know, for this moment. I mean, I'll be back in my home, and I know it's going to be awesome.
Come love others with 8 Days of Hope.
This is Pause to Pray, a chance to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today, we pray for Margaret Everson, Principal Deputy Director of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Her bureau is responsible for the management of fish and wildlife for the American public. Genesis 9:3 reminds us that the earth and everything on it was given to us by God. Everything that lives and moves about will be food for you. Just as I gave you the green plants, I now give you everything. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask you to guide Margaret Everson in her work at the Department of the Interior. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Wondering how you'll finish your degree now? At Liberty University, we want to help. So when you transfer into one of our more than 100 undergraduate online programs this fall, you could earn up to $3,600 in transfer student scholarships, or more if you live in Virginia. That means you could pay less than $900 per course and transfer in up to 75% of your degree. That's up to 90 credits. Save time and money at a school that's been helping students like you for over 30 years. Learn more by texting DEGREE to 49595. That's DEGREE to 49595.
A beloved tradition at the University of Georgia is now gone with the wind. The director of the Redcoat Marching Band announced they will no longer play Tara's theme at football games. The instrumental classic was the theme song for Gone with the Wind. The director said the song did not create a welcoming environment to minority football players. Head coach Kirby Smart said it was the right thing to do, said it's important to evaluate history and work to bring people together. Meanwhile, the Southeastern Conference Football League sent a warning to the entire state of Mississippi, either change your flag or face retribution. The SEC commissioner said unless the Confederate-era emblem is removed from the flag, they will consider moving all championship games out of the Magnolia State. Nothing more than an old-fashioned cancel culture shakedown. You know, my new book, Culture Jihad, How to Stop the Left from Killing a Nation, documents this very dangerous crusade to erase American history and culture. And I believe every freedom-loving American needs to read this book. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
We are 13 days into this occupation protest, which has prevented the Seattle Police Department from getting back into their East Precinct, which is about a block behind me. And the very first time there's a shooting inside this occupation zone, who do you think people called? Well, dozens of people called 911 for help, and police did respond, but this is how they were treated.
Please move out of the way so we can get to the victim. All we're trying to do is get to the victim.
Police body cam shows officers asking the crowd to let them through. One victim had already been transported to the hospital by protest volunteer medics, where he was pronounced dead. A second victim was later discovered a block away. But police and fire never got there. The crowd was angry and far outnumbered the police, who have been stripped of their crowd control tools like pepper spray and tear gas by the city council. Even as cops retreated, they were followed and taunted. And as they drove away, you can see bottles being thrown at them and the crowd chanting, "Whose streets? Our streets." Seattle Mayor Jenny Durkin, who has described the occupation as a block party, made no comment yesterday or today. Her office issued a statement saying police and fire must ensure public safety in all parts of the city. Both shooting victims were black men. The man who died was 19 years old. We now know that the other man is in critical condition and he is 33 years old. They have no suspect at this time, John. And again, the investigation is hampered by the fact they never got in to see the scene and they never got to interview any of the witnesses.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. That was Dan Springer on Fox News. That was actually Saturday. I think they had another shooting last night in that section of Seattle that has, you know, seceded from the Union. And actually over the weekend, Seattle, Minneapolis, and Chicago, all deadly shootings. Unbelievable, as police are unable to really step in and do what they have been doing for generations of this country, and that's protecting its people. Well, joining me next is someone who understands all of the complexities of this as much as anyone can. His name is Jeff Sessions. He served as a senator from the great state of Alabama for 20 years, and after that served as the highest law enforcement person in this country, attorney general, and he joins us this morning. Good morning, Senator Sessions. How are you?
Thank you, Sandy. It's so good to be with you again.
It's good to hear your voice, and I really want to know what you think about what's going on. As you look at the lawlessness, you just heard that report. I know you're watching it just like I am. As you see it play out, I just want to know what your thoughts are about what you're seeing.
Sandy, there's one thing that's in my mind right at the beginning of all this, particularly in Seattle. You cannot allow these people who are outlaws, really, they reject law, to take over property in this United States and occupy it. It should have been ended immediately. Now we've got a growing problem. Now people are being murdered, violently injured, and property damaged and stolen, basically. It's unacceptable in a great American country like this. So I thought the Texas lieutenant governor say it would take 5 minutes in Texas. Nobody's occupying property there. And that's what you need to do. You need to move quickly. So we've created a monumental problem that I think erodes people's respect for law in addition to the damage it does.
Yes, maybe that makes a good transition to that other big issue that you know so much about, because when you were attorney general, you spent a great amount of time trying to reach out to police organizations and to cooperate and to do all that you could. And that takes us to Minneapolis, where George Floyd was. It looks as though, on the video, this was a case of a police officer stepping over the boundaries and taking a man's life. And so we have all the problems there. I just want to know what your thoughts are about that, as you see that and the Black Lives Matter movement move into responding to the killing of George Floyd. Just your thoughts about that, General.
Sandy, the leaders on these communities where this kind of thing happened, they need to show courage. They need to stand up, and they need to say to the people of that community, you can protest, you can't riot, we're going to fix this problem. If this person did wrong, they're going to be prosecuted, and you don't have any doubt about it. But we're going to defend our police, make sure they're disciplined and organized and doing the right things, but they are essential for our community. We're not going to back down. We're not going to yield to emotional riots and violence, and we're going to defend the rule of law. I think that's what real leadership is, and we've not seen that in Seattle. We've not seen that in Minnesota, and it's made things worse, and it's going to hurt the community. It's going to hurt our minority communities the most, where most of the violence occurs. And Sandy, I'll give you, see if I can be succinct, but in Baltimore, they were, in Chicago, they were sued by the ACLU in 2015. They committed to a major reduction in police presence, the number of arrests, and that kind of thing. They'd been averaging 450 murders a year for 10 years. And then the next year, the first year under this new defunded police department, it went to 800 murders. 90% of those murders were in minority communities. There's no doubt good policing brings down violence and saves lives. Bad policing, constricted, defunded policing will create more death and destruction for our poorest among us. That's just fact. It's proven time and again.
Yeah, you may or may not remember that Chicago's my hometown, and I have to say, when I was living there, it was a very safe place. Right or wrong on Mayor Daley's part, there was strong police presence. The police were strong and moved swiftly and kept order, even in some of the bad communities. But that's just one city. And I think it bears going back a little bit because, you know, the news cycle is so filled with information. I don't need to tell you. It's like I'm trying to do talk radio, and honestly, Senator, I just can't keep up. As one person, I can hardly keep up with everything that's happening. So let's go back in time and kind of remember when you took your job as Attorney General, you were inheriting a situation where Eric Holder, the former Attorney General, had, I think, systematically been trying to target police departments all over the country. Can you say a word about that?
Thank you, Sandy. Absolutely. I'm glad you mentioned it. We had had a continual complaining from the Department of Justice, an attack, I think, sometimes unnecessarily, certainly creating a climate of hostility toward police. I was determined to reverse that. The last 2 years of the Obama administration, homicides that had basically declined in America for 30 years jumped 20%. That was a stunning increase. I announced, the president supported this, I announced that homicides and violent crime was going down, not up. I went around the country and I told our law enforcement officers and sheriffs and police, we have your backs, you have our thanks, we're going to support you, we're going to make our communities safe. They responded really, really well. And crime started going down. Homicides went down, violent crime began to go down instead of up. And now we've had this unbelievable series of events in which prominent, particularly Democrat and socialist politicians have just irrationally undermined our police, making it so much more difficult for them to do their job. And if they succeed in cutting their funding and eliminating police departments, it will be a catastrophe of monumental proportions. We have got to stand up to that. Our police officers are some of the best people in the world. They're out there every day. A lot of them see themselves on a Christian mission. They try to work with people and help situations, de-escalate tensions and bring people together, and are patient and strong. But it is a tough job, and we need to respect them and support them. And the last thing we need is for police to give up on the work, to think they're not appreciated, to have talented young people not become police officers. This would be a catastrophe, and we've got to, we cannot let it happen.
No, I totally agree. And I, you know, one question. I have always felt, I felt for a long time, only much, much worse now, that people who serve in Washington, and you were there for a very long time, especially in the Senate, that there's a naivete about the real dangers going on in this country. I feel the same way now, Senator Sessions. I feel like they don't, if they really understood, surely they would do something. Do you think that the deep state and the conditions that you see now that you've been out of D.C. for a while and you can, you know, as a consumer and as a citizen, kind of observe what's going on, do you think that you that there's a difference in the perception and experience of people who live in the country and the ones that live in Washington who seem to be, I believe, in denial about how serious this problem is?
I totally agree with that. People do not understand the struggles in America. We had nine Republicans and some good people. But nine of them wrote a letter to President Trump saying, keep bringing in all these foreign workers even when we've got 30 million unemployed. I mean, what possible misinformation do they have concerning the fact that there are Americans being laid off today? Many of them have been working 20, 30 years at factories, don't know where they're going to get a job, and we're going to bring in 1.4 million foreign workers just to take jobs when we got Americans unemployed? Median income in this country is a little less than $60,000. We got millions of Americans making $30,000, $40,000, struggling to get by. Think about the mama trying to buy a set of tires for an old car that she needs a new car but can't afford it, and struggling to get by. I don't think Washington understands that. I think the business, the globalist, the secularist, the theorist on some of these schemes, they're not paying enough attention to what it's like to live in a neighborhood that's not safe. They have a hard time to find a job. Your child is graduating from the community college or high school, and you wonder today, what are they going to do? Where can we find something good for them to get started at? So it's a tough. I do think Washington is disconnected. I think the socialists are ridiculous idiots, and I think some of the Republicans are not sensitive enough to the struggles, real struggles, that American people are going through.
There are so many things to talk to you about, and we're also going to get to the fact that you are in a Senate race now, a runoff race with the Coach Tom Tuberville, and we're going to talk about this in just a second. But one more issue before we do that. When you were Attorney General, I know that you did so many really fine things that people never heard about. And one of those was trying to reverse, like, the transgender bathroom issues and all of that. And so when the Supreme Court last week ruled 6-3 that the Civil Rights Act of 1964 applies to people of all kinds of sexual orientations or persuasions, I wondered what your thoughts were about that decision.
Well, Sandy, when I became Attorney General, the previous Obama Department of Justice was taking the view that the word sex in the 1964 Civil Rights Act applied to transgender situation, gender identity, and that we reviewed that and we concluded that there was no way that in 1964, when they said you could not discriminate based on sex, that anyone contemplated that it would protect somebody's personal theory about idea about their identity, sexual identity, gender identity. So we flipped sides on that case. We said that the law was the law, and it was never passed, although attempts had been passed in Congress to expand that law that failed. And Attorney General Barr continued that position, President Trump did, and we just lost that case in the Supreme Court, the Bostock case. I was so proud of Justice Alito. He said there's one word to describe what the court did, and that was legislation. He said that it was breathtaking in its arrogance, the decision. He said there was not one American in 1964 that basically would have imagined this kind of interpretation of the word sex. We believe that sex meant your biological sex, not what you decided it would be in that statute. Congress could change it, but they haven't changed it. So that's the thing. So this was, I think, judicial legislation. It was a deeply disappointing to me. One another case we switched on and won, and that was on Jack Phillips, the cake baker in Colorado.
Yes. We
wouldn't make that case. We switched sides on that one and won that one, but this one was deeply disappointed.
Yes, absolutely. And I just wanted people to understand that you were accomplishing so many things that got swallowed up in the headlines about the recusal and President Trump, but you were behind the scenes doing all kinds of things that no one reported. But when we come back, Senator, let's talk about your race in Alabama to go back to the Senate, which some people say, why would you want to do that? I want to ask you that question and see how the race is going. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Three quarters of a century ago, The Second World War was wrapping up. God's people were sustained and delivered. Out of those battles in Europe and in the Pacific, the Lord was at work. I'm Charles Morris. Join me all week for a series on Haven Today called Corrie ten Boom Through the War.
Haven Today, weekday mornings at 4:30 Central on American Family Radio. Listen online at AFR.net.
This week on Truth for Life, Alistair Begg concludes our study called Life Together. And then we begin a new series called Jars of Clay, where we'll learn how God takes ordinary people and forms them into something beautiful. Listen all this week to Truth for Life with Alistair Begg.
Truth for Life, weekday mornings at 11:30 Central on AFR and online at AFR.net.
For you formed my inward parts. You knitted me together in my mother's womb. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. According to a recent study published by the Christian Post, 76.3% of all abortions are obtained by, quote, God-fearing women, unquote, with 68.7% who identified themselves as Christian women and 18% of all abortions obtained by self-described born-again or evangelical women. A corresponding CareNet study found that many women with unplanned pregnancies go silently from the church pew to the abortion clinic, convinced the church would gossip rather than help. America's greatest need is repentance. When the hearts of the American people turn to God, everything else will be impacted.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. Here are several abiding truths to remember in these days of racial unrest. First, there is in truth only one race, the human race. We are all descended from one set of parents. Second, the law is colorblind. Lady Justice wears a blindfold because Justice does not see race or skin color or class or gender. Her one concern is with conduct, not the color of someone's skin. Third, no one should be punished or blamed for the wrong his ancestors did. The Bible says the soul who sins shall die. The son shall not suffer for the iniquity of the father, nor the father suffer for the iniquity of the son. The righteousness of the son shall be upon himself, and the wickedness of the wicked shall be upon himself. There will be no peace until we stop blaming people for what their forefathers did.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point. Weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Over the weekend, the Chinese Communist Party confirmed that it will be, as President Trump put it last month, absolutely smothering the liberties of the people of Hong Kong that it promised to respect for another nearly three decades. Beijing announced Saturday that it will be institutionalizing its repression of what the CCP calls troublemakers in the former British colony. A new investigative unit will create the pretext for arresting them, and the hated Chinese puppet, Hong Kong Chief Executive Carrie Lam, will use new judges to legitimate such apprehensions. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says such changes will reduce Hong Kong to the sorry status of any other city in totalitarian China. That will mean an end to its favored trade treatment by the United States and the rule of law that long made its securities exchanges attractive to foreign investors. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
New tonight, Birmingham City School Board deciding to end its partnership with Church of the Highlands after a social media controversy surrounding its pastor. Our Josh Gant live tonight with more on how they made that decision and why, Josh.
Yeah, Jonathan, these leases were on the consent agenda, which passed unanimously. So school board members did not talk about them tonight. At least one school board member, though, has said in the past that the district should not be in the landlord business. Now, tonight's vote to terminate Church of the Highlands leases at Parker and Woodlawn High Schools comes after a social media controversy involving lead pastor Chris Hodges following and liking posts made by the right-wing group Turning Point USA. Hodges has since apologized. Now, the church has been paying over $10,000 a month to the school board to hold services at Parker and at Woodlawn. Now, yesterday, the Birmingham Housing Authority also voted to cut ties with the church. Just like yesterday, we reached out to the church today, and we are still waiting to hear back. In Birmingham tonight, I'm Josh Gant, WBRC, Fox 6 News on your side.
All right, so you'd think that maybe Alabama would not be prey to all of this political correctness, but it's not true. Alabama, a once thoroughly red state, has been roiled by all kinds of things. One would probably remember that Judge Moore, I would say, was Kavanaugh'd in his attempt to become the senator for the spot that Jeff Sessions is running for right now, his former seat. It was disgraceful how they tried to destroy and managed to actually destroy him. And Doug Jones then, who was, with his, he's another one of these guys who seems like just, aw shucks, such a nice guy, whose policies are way far to the left, who does not represent Alabama. And now Doug Jones is trying to get reelected. And in this race, we have three people. We have the Auburn University football coach, former Tommy Tuberville. And we have Senator Jeff Sessions, who is our guest. Senator Sessions represented Alabama for 20 years as their senator, and then he became the attorney general. By the way, he was the first senator to come out in support of Donald Trump, and he went out on the campaign trail. It was a very, pretty bold move. And, of course, we all know how that ended, and we know that there's tremendous enmity between, at least from President Trump to Senator Sessions. And so Senator Sessions, one would have to ask, you know, why you would want to go back to D.C. and back into that cesspool, really. Why would you?
Well, Sandy, the people of Alabama allowed me to be educated and to really understand in more depth the threats our country is facing. I've learned how to fight and win and defeat the liberal secularists that too often wield influence and power in our country. And I understand how the system works. As I'd like to say to my friends in Alabama, if you think I went soft on you, if you think I sold out to the establishment, if you think I'm not willing, I don't understand the great issues of our time, and I don't represent your values, then don't vote for me. But I'm telling you, I never sold out. I never went soft on Alabama values. I respect our people. I believe our values are good, and that we need them in Washington. So when we talk about things like defending freedom of speech and religion, I became even more spoke on it all over the country as Attorney General. We have an opportunity to fix the immigration problem. I believe Donald Trump will be reelected. We need to have members of the Senate help him for a change, not undermine him, and get this fixed. We need to protect American jobs and manufacturing. I agree with him on that. We need to use tariffs and defend America against China and other unfair competitors. So my opponent said he does not believe in tariffs. He's 100% free trader. Trump is standing up to China, beating them up every day, he says, but I really don't agree with that. Well, that's what this last election was about, is getting off this everything's okay and defending American interests first, helping police stand up to China. We do need a new China policy, Sandy. It really needs to be, has to be bipartisan. It needs to go for 40, 50, 60 years because China is on a long-term march. They are a godless communist regime. They lie. They lied about the pandemic. They lie about everything. They lie to their own people. We need to take off the rose-colored glasses and see that this growing dynamic a communist regime is a threat to us and take long-term steps on it. We just continue to support our military and our police. Those are things that I have deep experience on all of them. And I do think that my opponent, who at age 65 never gave a contribution to a single candidate, never even to my knowledge said he was a Republican, has never made any political speeches or anything in his life, I'm worried that he's not able to hit the ground running like I can. It's a lot more, Sandy, it's a lot more than just casting a vote. I mean, to help the president fix immigration, for example, you need to be talking to all kinds of people. working hard, preparing, arguing in the media, on the floor, developing legislation. The president doesn't have time to do all that. He needs people in the Congress defending his China policy, his trade policy, his immigration policy, those kind of things that I was doing before he ran, and that's why I endorsed him, because he was advocating the policies that I had become, had come to believe in. Look, this country has an opportunity. We do not need to miss it. It'll be a window of opportunity to get some great things done in the next couple of years. If President Trump does not win, then we really do need some experienced, tough senators who will defend off and fight off a lot of the radical socialist, secularist agenda that's going to come down the pike in record numbers. I got to tell you, it's going to be a tsunami of bad legislation. Yeah. That you have to have some people who are willing to work at it every day.
Yes, I have to say that. Certainly, the things that you embrace, you know, I used to tell you, you were Ted Cruz before Ted Cruz, because you took really, you took very bold stands and fought so many fights in the Senate, and I have seen you be consistent in your positions, and I don't see much daylight between your positions on issues and the president's, and yet the president is very angry with you, Senator Sessions. You know that. I think it bears pointing out that you are the cabinet or official who worked very closely with him, who have been the object of his wrath, and some would agree with the president. You know that. They're upset because of the way things have developed in D.C. But you were the object of his wrath and continue to be, and yet you have not written a tell-all book. You have not, you know, gone all over. You have not gone the John Bolton way, which, by the way, is very upsetting to me because I know John really well. I just don't understand why you would risk your country in order to get your revenge, even if you maybe deserve some revenge. So I applaud you for not throwing your country under the bus in order to elevate your own defense. So thank you for doing that.
I supported President Trump because he was doing things I thought would in fact make America great. And we have had a fabulous run here under his leadership. For the first time in 20 years, wages for working Americans went up above inflation instead of being eroded by inflation. So a lot of great things have happened in China and trade and immigration and those things he's been really good at. So I'm at peace with this. I know the president's unhappy with me about recusal. Many conservatives, by the way, said that there was no cabinet official in Washington that was more effective in advancing the president's agenda than I was. I think that's probably true. I mean, we went to war for him and the values that he advocated, which were my values. That's why I endorsed him to begin with.
Could I just interject Senator? Let me interject something, because I do know, I know, because I have inside friends, that so many of the cabinet officials did nothing but undermine the president. I would say there are a huge percentage of them. From day one, from the moment it hit the ground, they had a different way, and they sought to undermine the president's policies because they did not embrace the president's policies, and that was not you.
That's true. We do have, I mean, even Bolton, people, you know, were surprised that Bolton was picked because his approach to foreign policy was somewhat different, a good bit different in many ways, than the president's. I was with a president's foreign policy. It was time for us to tell the Europeans, pay your way. It was time to say to the American people, we're in too many wars that have not helped the people we've tried to help, much less costing us trillions of dollars. I thought the president was correct about those things. There were huge forces that disagree. There are huge, huge forces that agree with my opponent, Tommy Tuberville, that we should never have a tariff, no matter what they do to us, that 100% free trade, even if they're cheating us. And the president says, no, I'm going to protect America's interest, America's manufacturing, America's jobs, just like foreign countries protect theirs, we're going to start protecting our people. Well, that is exactly what should happen. And we had free traders. We had open borders, very liberal immigrationists. We had interventionist foreign policy people. Too many of them holding high office, and they did, I think, in a lot of ways, undermine the president's agenda. He needed more people that actually believed in what he was saying. And out of his side, and is out there working every day, night and day, to advance that agenda. A president just can't be on top of every single thing. So his cabinet members, his members of Congress, his members of the Senate, they need to be unleashed and advocating for those values in their realms. And he's, anyway, that's sort of where we are. I do believe the Lord has allowed me to have a unique perspective on all this. I have no ill will toward the president. I felt Ed Meese is running an ad. You know it, former Attorney General Ed Meese under Reagan and Drake Heritage Foundation conservative. He's got an ad up for me right now saying Sessions had to recuse himself. He would have broken the law if he hadn't, and it would have hurt President Trump if he hadn't. And he supports President Trump totally. But I guess I would just say that's the only real disagreement we ever had, was over that decision that I felt I was compelled to make. I could not do otherwise. I had to take that stand, but I tried to always do it in a way that did not undermine his effectiveness and his agenda, which I support.
Very interestingly, just last week there was a primary in Virginia, I think the 6th District. The president was endorsing the incumbent, Denver Riggleman, who was the pick of the establishment. And Bob Good, who's very, very conservative, went to Liberty University, actually defeated Riggleman, the incumbent, by probably, I think, something like 12 points. And I think the people in Virginia sort of pieced together that sometimes the president's endorsements in primaries don't necessarily reflect the most conservative candidate, because he's getting advice sometimes in those races where he does not know people. In your case, he has some would say, a justifiable anger at you. But I think this is what you're entering into. The race is going. Tell us about it as you can. There's like a minute or two to go. How is the race going? It's July 14th, right?
Yes, we're moving forward. We feel good about making progress every day. I think the momentum is with us, and we're just telling people that you can trust me. We don't know who my opponent is. He had promised, flat promised, to debate once the runoff occurred. He rejected that promise. He misrepresented himself to the people of Alabama. He won't debate. He's not out there exposing himself, explaining his views. We do not need to send an empty suit, somebody who's never had a record of any courage and strength on battling for the people's interest, conservative, constitutional, faithful people's interest. He's just not been there. I'm just telling you, this is a person who doesn't seem to be interested in it. Whereas I have been blessed by the people of Alabama to have being in the world of Washington and know how to fight there. We won trade battles. Yeah. I won those battles. I won immigration 3 times. It seems you remember against all odds.
I do. I do. And We're out of time. But
okay.
I would say, people would say to you, why in the world would you want to go back? But we don't have time for that answer.
We can do some good for the country.
All right. Well, good. You get an A for that answer. Senator Jeff Sessions from Alabama, thank you, sir, for your service. And we will look forward to tracking all that's going to happen coming up. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.